What is up, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle, where we talk about work, ministry, and the people who make an art out of bringing them together. I have such a special treat for you today. Today, you are listening to Michelle McKinney, and she is just so much fun. I guarantee you, you are going to love her from the beginning of this episode. She is a dream architect. We get into actually what that is and what she does. She coaches and helps women sort of fulfill their dreams, and she is just so passionate, and she just loves her people so much and has so much wisdom. You were just going to get a ton out of this episode just about vocation. I think she'll push you to the next level sort of vocationally and your dreams and just seeing the way your vocation fits into the grand scheme of your life. We get into adoption and foster care. We get into a lot of great stuff. So I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. You're really going to love hearing from her. So make sure you share this on social media to let other people know about the Theology of Hustle. While you're thinking about it right now, go ahead and go onto iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast and give me a review and a rating. I would greatly appreciate it, and enjoy this interview with Michelle. Hey, Michelle, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you. I am so excited about our time together.
Yeah, I'm super pumped. It feels like we have a lot of similar things going on in our heads, and I'm excited to talk about all that. So why don't we jump off here and just have you tell your story?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, Michelle McKinney is my name, and I'm the founder and dream architect of Dreams Unleashed. And what we do is we help women to discover, define, and confidently live out their God-given dreams and purpose. The way it kind of got started is that for about 20 years, I've been an executive. I've been an executive assistant for some stellar C-suite executives, brands like American Express, Starbucks more recently, Fannie Mae, and then also in the nonprofit space for a church that was a multi-site church that was growing at an incredible space and really be impacting the community as well. And for those executives, the space that I saw myself in is not just being your assistant. So I'll schedule the meetings, I'll get the coffee, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, once we get that stuff taken care of, I wanted to understand, what is your vision? What is it that you wanted to see happen? And it wasn't just in the professional space, but also in the personal space, because the thing that I understood about executives, having worked for them for a period of time, is that if you have all the stuff that's on your plate, there's a lot of other stuff that happens, just not in the workspace, but also in the personal space. However, an executive can't ask you to go do their personal stuff unless it's typically a private company and it's part of the job description. In corporations, they're not allowed to do that, of course. However, if you volunteer, you can do that. And so that was the thing that I kind of set myself apart, is that let me help you to figure out how to win in both spaces of your life. And what that afforded me the opportunity, which I didn't know at the time when I kind of opened that space up, is it allowed even greater trust. And so greater trust also came with greater responsibility, meaning being their ambassador, or being able to, you know, sit in on meetings so that they can do other things. And then I can go into the meeting and be their voice and then come back and report as well. And so it kind of put me in that space of not just your assistant, but informally almost a chief of staff sort of space. Yeah. Without that title. And so being able to do that, it allowed me access to see and learn a lot more than what the role actually entitled. And I knew in the last probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I could see where I was getting to a place where that space of my life was coming to an end. I had done it, like I said, for about 20 years. And it was getting to a place where I still love the work, but in terms of being challenging, there's always something more to learn, but I was beginning to cap, and I could tell that God was doing this shift, that it was like, okay, now I want to take you into deeper waters. There are some things that, you know, a lot of things that you've learned along the way, but now I just need you to pivot with me to be able to lean into this turn for where I want you to go next. And so my passion at the time was for women. And it's not that I don't love men. I have a house full of men and my sons and husband. But my passion and my burden is really for women, because I had seen with my grandmother, myself, and other women who, you know, spent a lot of times taking care of everybody else, just because by nature as women, we nurture everybody else's dreams. We're nurturers. And so, but a lot in that space is we put our stuff on the back burner. And there's something that happens for women, especially in that 30s, when you're 30 and going into 40s, 50s and up, where it's like, you know what, but what about me? Because you've done all this nurturing of everybody else, and the disconnect that was happening is that you get to this space and it's like, but what about me? I want something more. I could feel it like rising up in me, but the opportunity existed that a lot of times women didn't know what it was that they wanted to do. They didn't know how to get to that place, perhaps, if they did have an idea, or they felt like they didn't have the resources or the time or any of that. And so my thought was, okay, I have this burden for women, but for 20 years, I've been supporting senior executives who have this really fast-paced life and are doing a lot of things and executing well. How can I take all those years of the combination of skills that I've learned with them, apply it to women to help them to really advance into the spaces for their God-given purpose and their God-given dreams? And even if a dream, you know, was something in the space of, I've always wanted to travel the world. Well, okay, let's figure out how to get you, what's the world for you? So the same thing that I've done for senior executives, being able to do it for everyday women is the work that we do.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love the vision and the mission and everything. So much to talk about. Let's jump off though. What was it like? So you went from, like you said, sort of, working with these executives, these C-suite executives, into launching your own thing, which is crazy, right? I mean, absolutely. That's a big deal. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit just about that season and what that transition looked like for you?
Yeah, it was scary as crap.
That means you're doing it right, I think.
You know? Absolutely. So it was scary, but the thing was, I had been, before I really jumped fully into this, I've always been doing something, you know, whether it was having women at my house or finding, you know, bringing women to the grocery store, where now at grocery stores, they have like seating and things like that. So I was always hosting, always trying something new. The number, and I didn't realize how many so-called, you know, not official businesses I've had until I think it was my husband or somebody reminded me. It's like, no, look back, you've had businesses, so to speak, all this time. And the thing about that is that we get scared because we think that we're supposed to have this thing and we just land on it, right? Because we're afraid that if we don't land on the thing, that it looks like failure. But all of those so-called businesses or passion projects that I had along the time, they really just prepared me for the way of where God was going to bring me. And so the difference for going from, you know, being in a corporate space or any space where you have a paycheck that's coming in on a every 2 weeks basis, every week, whatever, you know, that frequency is of a paycheck, that was the scariest thing. We called it in the corporate space, the golden handcuffs. And so with the golden handcuffs, it was, you know, you have all these beautiful things, you know, 401k benefits, you have your medical, you have your paid time off, you have vacation, you have, you know, EAP, you know, to be able to help with all the support services that your family needs. And they're beautiful, beautiful benefits. The thing where they become the golden handcuffs is that they're so good to you that when God wants to pivot you and you have to let go of those things, that is a really big decision, because those are the things that kind of have had a lot of comfort for you. So to go from that space into the unknown, and you have to create this stuff for yourself, and not necessarily to have a roadmap that is specific for yourself. People can give you ideas of what to do, but your journey will always be different. So you have to figure out what kind of calculated risk you're going to take. And that's not just with entrepreneurship. That's even with going to a new job, you know, and making transitions as well. So it was scary, but it's been good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. I love hearing about that, because I feel like I've never heard it described as golden handcuffs, but that is so descriptive. That's really good. I like that.
Yeah, thank you.
So a lot of your entrepreneurship, though, has sort of roots in growing up in a lot of ways, right? Do you mind talking a little bit just about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my dad, so to give you a little context, whenever I say my dad, I feel like I have to give context, is that my mom died when I was turning 5 of a brain aneurysm. My birth father, who was with us, who raised me, he was not in a space to be able to take care of 2 small kids. And my mom didn't have a will. And so when she was on her deathbed, literally, she asked one of my relatives, her brother-in-law and his wife, if they could take me in. And so they said yes. And so that is the dad that I'm referencing in this space. He is an entrepreneur. I come from an entrepreneurial family. Our family had a construction business before I was born called Lytell Construction Company. And so my grandfather ran that. So very entrepreneurial. My dad, who raised me, was very, you know, very spirited in starting things and building, right? And so when I was a kid, even in elementary school, probably starting at about age 8, he had me like looking at invoices and writing them out and all that kind of stuff. I think it was just cheap child labor. I don't think there was intention to it, but either which way, whatever way it was, whatever his intention, it worked for me, because early on it started planting those seeds in me, I believe, for entrepreneurism. And so that grew its space, you know, all the way up to high school. I didn't know that that would be where I would land, but even though I went to school and initially I went for accounting, I realized that wasn't the quite right the space for me. When I realized what that would look like, I was like, no, that's not quite where I fit. So from that space, I ended up going into fashion. And then after fashion, I left New York probably about my first year. And I was like, I need to be around the crickets. New York is too busy for me. So I came back home and just started, you know, working, so to speak. So my entrepreneurial roots started really, really early, which is one of the things that's really important to me. While women are my burden passion, I see God has been opening up my heart and my space and my eyes even more to working with young people also and their parents to understand that it's important while they're young. So while my daughter is 6 years old, I'm helping to try to nurture the things that I see naturally in her that she spends a lot of time in doing that she doesn't get enough of. And so that's the thing that I attribute to my dad, is that I don't know that he saw entrepreneurism in me, but however he did it, he cultivated it and he nurtured it. So that's where the easy correlation goes for me in terms of where I am now and clues to what I was doing when I was a kid. And one of the things I was doing back then, along with my dad working me, is teaching. I would teach my brothers and sisters, you know, whatever books I could get my hands on from my teachers when I left school for the summer, they would be my students. And so while I'm not a teacher in the classroom, I'm definitely using that space of teaching other people now.
Yeah, I love that. Your story stuck out to me because when I was 12, my parents both quit their jobs to start a business.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing manufacturing since I was that age, you know,
Like
in plastics, and I made little plastic pieces coming off the line. So it's like a bug that gets in you, right? Like you can't help it.
Right. You know? For sure.
I love that. So I really like that idea though, about cultivating your children's gifts and such that you've seen in them. Can you talk a little bit more about what like journeying through that with a child looks like, how to do all that?
I am so glad you asked me about that, because this excites me so much. So this is a thing. I think we think about, when we talk about purpose, we think for some reason that purpose equates to adulthood. It doesn't. I believe that purpose, of course, starts before you're even born. You know, when God is planting all that stuff in you, it's very intentional. And one of the things that I work with my clients on is creating a life purpose statement that is built on the natural gifts that they have. And we come up with the core 3, so to speak, right? So With children, like my son is in his 12th grade year. And so we just started doing formal coaching with him. So I'm his coach now, right? So okay, the same thing that I do for adults, I do that for my own children now, right? Now it's different in terms of how it looks with my 6-year-old versus my 17-year-old. So for my 6-year-old, what I'm doing is I'm paying attention to the things that typically are literally, they're driving me crazy, like absolutely bananas right now. So she's flipping all over the place all the time. And I know all kids do it, but she does it at a unreasonable amount of time she spends. She's forever flipping. And so she's into gymnastics and the arts, right? So for example, this summer she was in an arts camp because since I know that that's a place that she spends her, that she loves, I try to put her in environments to open her up to the world of arts. Because just because, for example, let's say your child is using Legos all the time, right? That doesn't mean they're going to be an architect. You know, we don't have to put the clear correlation between, oh my gosh, my child's playing with a stethoscope, they're going to be a doctor. You don't have to do that, but is, oh wow, they're playing with a stethoscope. Let me open them up to other opportunities. I had said, I think on Instagram this past week, that if your child, for example, is always gaming, like you cannot get PlayStation or whatever it is that kids play now out of their hands, open them up to the world of technology and to robotics and to animation, you know, put them in classes and camps and things like that, that if they're spending all that time doing that stuff, something about it intrigues them. And so the job for us as parents, I believe as nurturers, is not just to take care of course, the obvious things that they need in terms of food and clothing and shelter, right? But also to help, because God has entrusted them to you. And so God, for some reason, and I think my kids are phenomenal, God has entrusted these incredible little beings to me. And the expectation is not just they make it safely to age 18 and that I teach them, you know, Christ-like principles, but that I also help nurture the gift, because when they leave this place, they have to deliver that gift back to the world, not just even when they become adults, as I said, but even now. And so I'm helping my kids to cultivate that in a space now where they're giving their gifts back to the world also. It's not perfect, but it's something that I'm trying to get better at every day.
Wow. Yeah, I love that. As you were talking, I was just thinking, it feels like when we talk about discipling our children, it's always in a spiritual way, right? Like, we talk to them about Jesus, which is all great stuff, but where do we disciple them in how they use their purpose, like you say, right?
Their gifts.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. Okay, so then a lot of your coaching, a bulk of your coaching is coaching adults in finding that vision. And before we got started, you sort of talked about this delineation you have, or not calling something a job. Can you speak to a little bit of just like purpose and
Yes. So this is the thing. If you say, you know, people say, you know, tomato, tomatoes, right? But job and purpose or job and assignment are two totally different things, right? If I say, yeah, I got to go to my job today, just even the energy around that is I gotta go, right? It is more of a obligation to do, because I gotta go to my job because I have to take care of my bills and da 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 da, right? If I say, yeah, I have to go to my assignment today, or I have to go to my purpose today, right? That's very different, because a job is check in, check out, like Fred Flintstone, right? I used to watch Fred Flintstone as a kid, and it was, he'd jump in the car and he'd punch that time card and then he'd be running out at 5 o'clock, right? When you're typically in a job sort of situation, it's just like, oh my gosh, can I just get up out of here, right? But when you understand that where you are, no matter where you are, that it is an assignment, and assignments have purpose. So if you are assigned to something, right, it means the person who assigned it to you was thoughtful about whether or not you should be the right person for that, because they had purpose and vision around what needed to get accomplished, right? So there was a lot of thought that went into it. And so when it is my assignment, I believe there are two things that have to happen before you move on to the next assignment. And this is, I don't have scripture for this. This is what I just believe very strongly until God tells me, girl, be quiet. Stop telling people that, right? And so far, he hasn't told me that just yet. And so the one thing is that you are there to pour out every single thing to be able to give back to that organization. Or there are even times that God will send you for just the one person. There may be one person on this assignment that you're supposed to be pouring out into to be able to give them hope. And so we have to be mindful of that so that we're not just going in to be able to push the buttons and then check back out and leave and go do what I want to do. We need to be open, not just our minds, but our hearts to who's around us. Who is it that needs to be seen? Because there's so much when we're in the workspace and that marketplace, we typically spend more time with the individuals there than our own families. Yeah, and so the thought that you can impact somebody's life while you're there, not just by doing a job, but showing up for your assignment. The second thing that I believe that you're there for is for you to be poured into. And so there are things that you need to get from that assignment that are going to help you for the next assignments that are going to come down the future. And so it's like almost, I say, if you go in the grocery store and you're going to make chocolate cake, you know, you have to go down the different aisles to get the ingredients to be able to make this chocolate cake. So there are things that we want, you know, big visions, big dreams and things that we want. And in my headspace, I think that God's like, okay, yeah, but not yet. You're not ready just yet. There are skills that you need to develop. So for example, me going to Starbucks, it had assignment. There were things that I clearly was supposed to pour out to make the organization and my boss and my colleagues better. But there were things, there was a specific skill set that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt. And for me, it was numbers. I hate numbers, but I needed to really understand numbers a lot better in terms of how that impacts business. And so the person that I was assigned to, my boss, she was killer at it, to the point it was intimidating for me. If I would have known that the assignment on the job description, if it said that you needed to be good in being able to analyze numbers, I would have never applied for it because I would have disqualified myself, because that was a thing that scared me to death, is being able to interpret numbers. Mm-hmm. However, I believe that God was like, baby, for where we're going, you got to get this under your tool belt. Because if you keep telling people, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, we got to stop using that as a crutch that you don't know how to do it. I'm not saying that you're called to numbers, but you got to get this skill set in order to do whatever the next thing is. And it makes sense to me now, because as I am a business owner and this is how revenue comes in for my household, I got to understand numbers, not just what's coming in, but what's the storyline behind those numbers as well. So that's the difference between, to me, job and assignment and purpose.
That is really good stuff. I like that a lot. Even your second point, it occurs to me that a lot of times we see our job as like a burden. Like maybe this isn't the thing that I'm like totally called to, is not my everything.
Yes.
Right? But if you see it as, I loved your analogy, the cake analogy, I got to go down these different aisles. If you see it as, this is something that's building towards that, it changes the way you interpret that entire job in a lot of ways.
Everything. It changes your get up in the morning. It doesn't mean that, you know, if it's an assignment that you're not hype about in the morning, it doesn't mean you're like, all right, gotta go, right? But if you take a step back and you understand that God chose me for this, out of all the people, He chose me and it has intention for it, right? And the thing is, you can choose to jump ship early. You can. But if you think about, who was it? Jonah, right? In the belly of the whale, you got to go back. You can keep trying to hop, you know, from this to the other thing. But at the end of the day, you are going to get that, because right. God is so loving that He is not going to bless you with something before you are matured enough to handle it. He's just not. Because one, it destroys, or, you know, it alters the testimony of it. If God gives me something before I am matured enough to handle it, where's the glory in that, right? It's sort of like my kids, you know, each one of them, while they are different ages, each one of them are at different places in terms of what I can trust them with, right? Even though my 19-year-old is older than my 17-year-old, there are certain things that I can trust my 17-year-old with in terms of resources that my 19-year-old, I know that we're still cultivating those things. And then there are things for my 19-year-old that I know I'm like, yeah, he's ready for that. But my 17-year-old, he's not ready for that. And it doesn't have anything to do with age. It has to do with his readiness. And that, has he learned that? And are we still working through those things?
Yes. Such good stuff. Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's putting it in a different light than I've ever sort of thought about it. That's good stuff.
Awesome.
So yeah, thanks. So let's talk a little bit though about what then coaching looks like. Like, what is coaching somebody? What would somebody experience as they, how do you walk somebody through this process?
Yeah. So there's a couple different coaching platforms that I offer. So there's one-on-one coaching and then there's group coaching. So one-on-one coaching with me, what that looks like is we have single coaching, which is typically I say to people, it's the sort of, let me pick your brain. You know, that's the thing that a lot of people say. I've said it before myself, like, hey, can I just pick your brain on XYZ? So that's like just single coaching for somebody who's like, hey, I have this idea. I have a thought and I just want to run it by you and let's just unpack it in this one session. Once we have this session, I'm good. I just need somebody to bounce it off of, right? And then there is the next space is I offer what I call clarity duo sessions. And so clearly duo being two, those are two 90-minute sessions. And the thing that I do with the two 90-minute sessions is, have you ever gone to church or a conference, right? And the person's speaking and you're like, yes, I got it. I'm ready to roll. I got my points. It's on, right? Have you ever experienced that?
Oh, for sure. Right? For sure.
But then it's like Wednesday rolls around and it's like, oh crap, what was I supposed to be doing?
Yeah, I don't remember everything.
What was exactly that? And you're demotivated or whatever, just because life is happening, right? And so what I do for those Clarity Duo sessions is that we meet for the first session of the 90 minutes, and then there's always work that has to get done. And then we schedule your second session that will help us to get to what's the plan, what's the clear executable plan and your next steps, right? So I understand that just like a conference, a workshop, a church or what have you, is that after that first session, you can feel like, oh my gosh, what was I supposed to do? So you have the option to exercise like a 20-minute, I call it a phone a friend, which is me, and say, hey, Michelle, I know that we had clarity around what I was going to do, but I'm a little bit stuck on my assignment and what I was working through. I want to bounce it off of you. I like that because I don't want to use our second session to help you get unstuck, because what I know is that there's going to be a whole bulk of work that you're still going to have to do after that session in that. So those are the Clarity Duo sessions. Most of my clients, when they do the Clarity Duo sessions, the very first thing that we typically do, if they don't have it yet, is we establish their life purpose statement. And what that is, it's really figuring out what's your sweet spot. And the way that I determine sweet spot is it's the perfect balance of your gifts, your passion, and the problems that exist in the world. And, you know, even though there may be people that have some of the same core three gifts as you, I like to focus on the core three, same gifts as you, and same passion or even the same problem, right? God is so daggone creative that nobody will be able to do it like you. And so we create a specific life purpose statement by taking the best of the best in terms of each of those areas. We show them up in a circle. And so it looks like a Venn diagram. And we create that life purpose statement. It's very similar to if you were a company and you didn't have a mission statement, you would wake up every day and you just kind of do whatever feels good or whatever is coming at you. You end up being reactive instead of proactive and very intentional. And so being able to create that life purpose statement, it helps us to figure out what's your North Star. How are you going to guide your decisions and your intentions on how you spend your time so that you're not just catching every random ball that comes to you? And especially for people who are creatives, you are coming up with ideas all the time. Exactly. Whatever the newest, shiniest thing is, that's the thing that's like, oh, wait, what? I got the idea. But then your buddy who knows, you're like, but wait a minute, last week you were trying to flip houses. How in the world are you doing healthcare this week, right? What's up with that? So creatives tend to have a lot of good ideas, but we have to get to what is the great God idea. And so that's what that life purpose statement helps us to do. They go back home And in their homework, I ask them to just dream. I want them to just dream. Nothing is off limits. You are not allowed to disqualify anything because you don't have the money, you don't have the team, you don't have the time. Your only job is to dream. And that's important for adults because a lot of times when, you know, when you're a kid, you know, you'll dream as big and as wide as you can until an adult comes in and projects their own fears onto you about what you can't do. And so for adults, when you've been moving around in life and you have bills and you have responsibilities, you easily begin to disqualify a lot of your dreams immediately. Mm-hmm. So what I have to help my clients to do is to unpack and unearth all of that stuff. Because if we don't, if we're not able to also address what your fears are, or what I like to call them, your dream hurdles, we can create a killer strategy, you know, and an executable plan after the second session. But if we have not tapped into what are the dream hurdles going to be, you can be right back at my office again, starting all over. And while it's great for revenue, it's not great for the story that God is cultivating right in you and in me. And so that's what we do in the Clarity Duo sessions. And then the last opportunity that I provide is a more intensive approach. And that's for clients that are like, you know what, look, Michelle, those two sessions are good and all, but I know I am a person that I need greater accountability in my life. So, you know, we need to create that stuff and we need to be able to figure out what the plan is, but I need you to check in with me and hold me accountable. And I need somebody that as I'm coming up with stuff and what it is and I get stuck, I need somebody that I can vet this with. You know, my husband, and he's all cool and he's very supportive, but he just doesn't get the vision and what the challenges are. And so I need somebody that's going to be a buddy, a girlfriend, but not just a girlfriend. The girlfriend part comes in that I'm very transparent and easy to talk to. And but at the same time, the business side of it, that's like, come on now, we can't keep delaying this, because the longer you delay, there are people that are praying and asking God for a solution. And they're thinking God's not answering. And really what it is, God's waiting for you. And God's like, I got something for you. It's coming. But right, she just won't get her stuff together and get moving. So that's the breadth of what it looks like in terms of one-on-one coaching. And then the other space is more group coaching. And I love group coaching. Andy Stanley from North Point, their church says we grow best in circles and not rows, right? And so that concept being that, you know, when you are at a church service and you are in rows, right, everybody is looking straight ahead, but nobody is connecting, right? So you get the information just for yourself. In the context of small group, when you're in circles, that means that we're getting transparent. We're getting to know one another. And I'm also able to see that, wait a minute, it's not just me that's struggling with this. And even if it were just me that's struggling with this, maybe, you know, this issue, then I have people that are going to cheer me on and support me through it. And so that's what group coaching does. And so it's where I have groups of women, usually about 6 to 7 women, that are all looking to either start a business, grow their business, figure out what their idea is. And so we come together the first few sessions. We meet once a month for 4 hours in the evening, because a lot of my clients are still in the marketplace also while they're growing their business. So we meet like from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. The first three sessions have more of a foundational things that we're going through in terms of mission and all that kind of stuff. And then after that, it's more of a state of the union where each person has, it's 2 people per session. They have the opportunity to present their business and kind of share, this is what's happening in my business. This is what the wins are. This is where I really need some support. And so we just spend that part of the session just going deep into their business model and the things where they need some idea generation and problem solving and all that kind of stuff. And I love, love, love groups.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. That's such good stuff. I love all of that.
Thank you.
One thing that intrigues me, your title is Dream Architect. I love that's perfect. I love that. Do you mind talking a little bit through what dream architect is.
Yes. And what in the world is a dream architect? Because it is not in any college handbook at all, right?
I want to be one though. I mean, it just like is so, it's so awesome sounding.
You should put it on your business cards effective today. So it's something that I came up with. If you remember, I talked through just the idea of my family having their own business, and they were a construction company, Lightel Construction. And so when I thought about the work I had been doing, and so when I started the business, I was not called a dream architect. I don't even know what I was called back then. But I thought about the work that I was doing, and there were so many people that have the title of coach, life coach, and that sort of deal. And I didn't necessarily want that title, but sometimes when people ask if it makes it simple for them, they are more than welcome to call me a coach, a life coach, or a business coach, whatever they like. But I like the idea of a dream architect, because whenever you are getting ready to build something, if you're building a home, right, from scratch, it is important to bring in not just the contractors that are going to do the work, but before you get the people that are going to do the work that you're going to invest to be able to lay the tile, put in the carpeting and all that kind of stuff to design the room, you have to bring in an architect, because the architect is going to help you with the blueprint to understand, what is the vision for this home? Tell me the story behind this home, right? How do you want to move in this place? Who's going to come into it? What do you want it to feel like, right? And so they're going to create this blueprint, and the blueprint will be the foundation for how the home is created. And so that is very similar to a dream architect. I'm saying, before you hire the graphic designers, before you spend all this money doing all this stuff, let's think about the vision. What is your vision? What do you want it to feel like? What do you want it to be? What is your idea of who's going to come into your space? Why do you want this, right? Why do you want, you know, because an architect, you know, you can come in with the idea of, I want a Rambler, right? But when you begin to describe what your idea is and how you want people to move in, he might or she might say, well, you know, I know you said you wanted a Rambler, but based on what you just said, have you ever thought of a split level home instead? And so that's what a dream architect does, is I really get to not just the mind space, but the heart space in what's happening, so that we can create a blueprint, so that as you go out to be able to hire the different people that you need, it all starts from that foundation. And they can be, you know, whether or not you are just starting a business or a dream, whatever that dream is, or if you're already into it, there's nothing wrong with adjusting the blueprint. And so that's the work that I do.
I love that. That's so descriptive. I love the background too of construction that you have. You know, it's like, you know exactly how all this works, right?
Yeah. I'm so visual, man.
I really appreciate that. I'm really enjoying that. It's very good. It's very helpful. So I appreciate that. Okay. So you're a dream architect. You help people find their purpose. What would you say are some of the biggest hurdles that people have to overcome in order to find their purpose?
Yeah. So it may be different for men, and maybe it's the same, and you could, you know, probably share that. Specifically for women, one of the biggest challenges is, there's several. So one is understanding your worth, you know, and just having that confidence that you can do it, right? All of my clients don't fall into that space. There are some women that are very certain. It's like, I got this. I just need a plan, right?
But then
there are other women who, you know, for a lot of different reasons that we sometimes have to unpack, really doubt whether or not they are the ones, you know, they're the chosen ones. It's like Moses. And my two favorite people in the Bible that I often reference in coaching and workshops and speaking engagements are Moses and Esther. And for Moses, the thing is, he was that person that he was called to go do something, but he did not think that he was the right person for it. Right. And so, you know, he was like, you know, what do you mean me? I'm the person with the stammering tongue. I stutter. What do you mean? You want me to go to Pharaoh and you want me to tell him to let my people go away? You clearly got the wrong person. Right. And right. So for Moses, it went back to, what is that you have in your hand? All I want you to do is what you already have. That's it. I got the rest of it, right? So maybe in that example, it's actually saying, you know what? Men may have the same struggle that women do, right? Yeah. So that's one thing. The second thing is the time. It's because when I've done speaking engagements and other coaching, one of the things I help women to unpack is I want you to list all your roles, right? And so a lot of times people, women will start off with like, oh, I got these five. But by the time I help them to unpack them, they realize they have like 18 different roles that they're juggling at any given time, which is mind blowing because it's like you're just managing it and you're not aware that they are all different roles. And if you don't have intention, then you literally are taking care of, as I said before, whatever is screaming the loudest. And so it's the time. Another one in terms of dream hurdles is money, is figuring out, look, things are tight, especially for middle class families. People look at, I know that when I have had to go through, you know, different things with the banks and this, that, and the other, and they're like, oh yeah, on paper, this is great. And it looks like you have a couple of thousand dollars left over at the end of the month. And I'm like, no, I don't. And I'm like,
are we looking at the same paper? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm like, what paper are you looking at? And so, you know, for a lot of middle income families and below middle income families as well, just the money is just not there. And for some, it's like, you know, well, if you save this, if you save that, costs are rising and the expenses are, you know, are just getting just out of whack. And so it's like, Michelle, I don't have $500 to be able to start my business, to put it as a legal entity, or to even hire you, or to get a graphic designer, or any of those things. And so sometimes money is an issue. And so I help her to figure out what resources she really does have at her disposal to make it happen, whatever make it happen is for that space and season for her. And then the other thing, the last thing is a team, is that a lot of times women are so accustomed to doing everything on their own and aren't comfortable asking for help, because sometimes we are taught, even sometimes maybe it's not intentional, but maybe because we watched our mothers and our grandmothers do all the things, so to speak, that women are a lot of times not comfortable asking for help, even though they can be drowning. And so it's like, look, I already have all the stuff going on. I don't know how to do a podcast. I don't know what I would need. I don't know, you know, how to do this graphic design to be able to create some. I don't understand social media. And I don't have a team of people. I don't have my friends to be able to help me. My friends have no interest in the stuff that I, you know, I'm looking to do. And so it's helping them to be able to cultivate teams and community of people that can cheer you on and, you know, get you to where you need to be. And it's not even always in that space of the business, you know, or the vision or the purpose, you know, even if you're looking to move and shift into a different career, sometimes the team that you need has to do with your home life. And so it's like laundry is piling up, you know, I have cooking, I have all these different things to do. So sometimes it's even helping them to understand some things you need to ask for in terms of volunteer. If you don't have the resources to hire a team, or maybe, you know, for a season of time, I've done this. I've gone to the laundry services that will just wash and dry all the clothes. And so they became a part of my team. There have been times that I've asked my mother-in-law to make meals and my mom to make meals for me so that two nights out of the week, I don't have to think about meals. So it's being able to cultivate that team. So those dream hurdles are real, in the same way that you see a runner trying to, you know, cross over that hurdle, which is why I call them dream hurdles. If you get intimidated by the hurdle, you'll never make it to the finish line. And so my job is to help them to, one, identify what the hurdles are for them in their lives so they're not intimidated by them and just decide not to run the race. And then not just to identify it, but figure out what are the resources they have around them and how can we strategize to be able to leap over those hurdles.
Gosh, that is great stuff. That is so practical.
Very practical.
I love that, because it feels like for me, maybe this is just me, but dreaming comes so easy, but actually putting a plan in place is the hardest part, right?
Why you need a dream architect, man, to help you with the plan.
Right. Yes, very much so. Very much so. That's awesome. I love all that stuff. Okay. Time is flying here on me. I have so many things I want to get to. Something I really want to get to, though, specifically is adoption. I've realized from listening to some of your stuff that you have adopted, and that's something that's near and dear to me. Do you mind kind of walking us through your adoption journey?
Yeah. So just a little bit of background. My mom, as you know, I was referencing before, my birth father, my mom, when my mom died, when I was turning five, she did not have a will. And because she did not have a will, and because there were some challenges with her and my father's relationship, it created some tensions between the two families. And there literally became a nonverbal fight in terms of the custody of my brother and I. And so because she had asked, as you recall, I said that she had asked my dad's family, his brother, on her deathbed to take care of me, it wasn't in writing. And my brother and I, even though we are siblings, we have different fathers by birth. And so it became not a good situation. So one side of the family took me and the other side of the family took him. And so if you can imagine splitting two kids in half, it was very traumatic for both me and my brother, because all in an instant, we lost my mom, we lost my dad, and we lost each other. And so life just instantly changed because families just couldn't, you know, communicate well and figure out what's going to be best for the children. And so for me growing up, I went through a lot. And one of the things that I went through, some might say that it was good, but it, you know, the effects of it were not, in that I was an A student. So A, sometimes B student. And so I went through a lot trying to prove my worth, because I did not want to be bounced around from home to home. Whereas my brother was, growing up, I was like the cute little girl, because I was five. My brother was 10 when my mom passed, and he was always into stuff, And a lot of it really was just that he was an inquisitive child. He was always playing with electrical things, not setting fires, but just like wires and stuff like that. And go back to that whole nurturing thing. You know, now he works, I think I can say this, he works for Secret Service. And so you see how that, you know, if not cultivated properly, you understand why he was always into stuff. But everybody didn't understand that. And there just wasn't the right environment to be able to support it. And so he bounced around from family to family, which was really tough on him. And it was hard for me to watch as a kid. And so the way that I protected myself was being the good child. So it was not getting into trouble, making really good grades, improving myself, right? The impact and effects of that is that I never had time to grieve my mother's death, because my dad, when my mom died, told me to tell my brother, who was 10, not to cry. Now, his desire in sharing that was to try to comfort, because he didn't know any better. I understand that now as an adult, right? But what it did to me is that when my dad said, tell your brother, who's 10, not to cry, that his mom just died, basically, right? That said to me, Michelle, you are not supposed to cry over this. And so I internalized that at the age of five, all the way up to adulthood. And so there was so much going on with me. And so I went through bouts of trying to figure out how to kill myself when I was in middle school and into high school and even into my initial years of college. And so, but I kept all of that internally. And so when my husband and I got married, that foster care was the initial thought. No, I'm sorry. I think it was adoption. It was foster care or adoption. I can't remember which of the two. And so it was only domestically was what my thought was, because I wasn't really exposed to anything beyond adoption in the U.S. system. And then one day I had gotten hurt at work, because I'm just such a busybody and I don't know how to be still and let God speak. And so it seemed as if whenever God was trying to speak to me, I always got hurt, because I couldn't go to work and he would speak because I was still, right? And during one of those still moments, I was writing out a blog post, and this might sound like, who writes this thing on a bucket list? Because it's not a bucket list thing, but I wrote, one day adopt a child internationally. And it literally, as soon as I finished that last word, my finger jumped back off of the paper, because I'm like, where did that come from? And so I began to immerse myself in more and more adoption blogs and understanding what the need was. And I became more aware of families who had adopted internationally. My heart began to really sink for and be burdened for Ethiopia specifically, just because of the number of children, the stats, and just like in a lot of third world countries that, you know, as you're aware, just the mortality rate is really high, in because of things that are treatable here in the US that they just don't have access for. And so that's where my heart started. And so we went through the adoption process. It was a lot more money than what I could ever pay. I tell people that we were not one of those families who could write a check. I share very transparently that I was the person that was calling the electric company trying to figure out how to make payment arrangements for our bills. And so the idea that here I am trying to make payment arrangements to pay a utility bill, but God, you're asking us to adopt. And at the time, I think the total adoption fees, including travel, was like $28,000. I'm like, God, yeah. We can't do this. You're going to have to make this happen. And he did in such an incredible way, so much so that by the time we finished saving and fundraising, and most of our money was fundraising, by the time we finished, the beautiful thing is that we were able to educate a ton of people about the need for adoption in the US and internationally. So that was the beautiful thing behind us not having the funding to be able to do it. But by the time we finished, we had fully funded the adoption before I set foot on Ethiopia soil. And our friends had helped us to raise, and then we saved also enough to allow me to live in Ethiopia for 2 months with my daughter while we waited for the U.S. Embassy to clear us. And so then that gave me even more exposure to what the need was and just how possible it was for everyday people like you and I to be able to impact here in the U.S. and then just globally also. So that's been my heart for adoption. And then I still have a deep desire to also impact foster care. More recently, I was asked to serve on the advisory council for National Angels, which is an incredible nonprofit that is run by a woman named Susan Ramirez. It started out in Austin, and they are growing foster care support across the U.S. And so the role that I serve along with, I believe it's seven of us total, all of the other individuals are all incredible business leaders. And so we are lending our advice and our support to be able to help them to grow. And what that growth looks like is being able to support families who are called to foster care, and then also supporting those individuals. Because one of the things that I learned from Susan and the team at National Angels is that when you accept the call to do foster care here in the U.S., you are basically opening up your home to government scrutiny at any point in time. You know, somebody can come into your house to check on the welfare of the children, which is, you know, which is a good thing. But at the same time, it just alters your life totally. So the thought is, for those individuals who are called to foster care, and we recognize everybody is not called to do foster care, for those who are called to foster care, how can we come alongside of them and lift the burden a little bit in terms of our time to be able to help support them and the children they're taking care of, and in terms of resources? So whether it is, you know, a kid that wants to play basketball, you know, I want to be on the basketball team. Just think about the number of kids who are in foster care that don't have that opportunity for extracurricular activities because the person that's taking care of them, their resources are typically very limited. People think about, oh, well, they get a check. Okay, but how much does it actually take to run a household, you know, for a whole family? Yes. So that's the work that God has me delving into a bit more that gets, that has me just as excited about adoption, but I would have never guessed. But then again, it goes back to how God uses everything. What was a really painful space in my life as a child growing up, you know, God was like, all things work together for good. We're going to take that pain and we're going to help bring healing, not just to you, but to other people as well. And we're going to use your gifts and your passion to be able to help solve a problem that exists in our world. So I love how intentional God is with every single one of our stories, which is why it's so important that we get clarity around our purpose and the things that we are called to do, but not just get clarity about it, but we actually get moving as well.
Wow. Thanks. That's good stuff. That gets me so excited. I just love just talking about foster care and adoption and people doing amazing work like you. It's awesome. And thanks for being willing to share your story.
No, thanks for asking about it.
I appreciate that. Yeah, that's great stuff. So, okay, well, we'll go ahead and wrap up here with my final two questions. Okay. So first, what is your strangest job that you have ever had?
My strangest job, I mean, some people may not consider it strange, but I worked at the go-kart raceway first job, and I was 14. I think that was my very first job. I started working very young and have been working ever since I was 14. And so I was the cashier, and it was just fun at the same time because it was like all the go-kart, you know, rides that you could ever want, which can be a bit dizzying, but it was a lot of fun. And it really, it got me into the space of what working can do, because there were, you know, now as you ask about it though, there were a lot of nonprofits that would come in, and you would see the impact that these nonprofits were making on kids' life. And I didn't understand it fully at the time, but now as I trace back, I'm like, dang, that was a really, you know, that was a weird kind of a job, but it was a whole lot of fun. But I saw how, you know, everything gets connected. So that was fun.
Yeah, and you were, that's awesome. And you weren't messing around, 14, and you're 14, working at the, that's no messing around right there. I love that. Cool. So, okay. So finally then, what is one piece of advice that you would give to somebody looking to bring ministry to God's kingdom into their job?
Yeah.
Or dream, I guess.
Yeah. I think that, you know, one of the things that I remember when I was working, at one of the corporate jobs I used to work at, I had a friend. So at this particular corporate job, they had what was, I forgot what they were, there were some sort of employee groups where no matter what it was that you had a desire to do, so whether it was faith or whether it was some kind of hobby, people met together. And so this particular one, it was called Salt and Light. And so this was for Christians, where Christians could get together and connect at the workplace for an hour once a week. And so we did a Bible study. And I remember a friend of mine, I invited her to come, and she wouldn't come because she strongly believed in separating her work from her faith. And I think that's an individual choice for everybody. So I'm not downing that. I just think that you miss the opportunity to be able to bring your whole self to work, right? And for every job, for every industry, that looks different. It does not mean that you're putting scriptures on everybody's desk. No, you're not doing that. Don't do that, y'all. But what it can mean is, what are the principles of what I believe? And from a faith perspective, the biggest principle that we could probably all agree on in terms of the Christian world is love, is that I need to bring love no matter where I go. And so it's thinking through, how can I be intentional every week? Because I'm not going to lie, you know, I don't care how much of a Christian you are, there is no super Christian that every day you feel like bringing your whole self, because you have stuff that happens in your life too, right? But maybe you can think about on a weekly basis, who can I focus on this week? Who can I show extravagant love to this week? I don't have to say I love them, I don't have to whatever, but how can I speak? So there's a, when I was at Starbucks, in operations, there was a book that I taught from that you guys are probably familiar with, Gary Chapman's The Five Love Languages. Well, they have the one that's for the workplace, and it's called The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. And so I taught that to our executive leadership team, and it was phenomenal because I helped them to understand that there are ways that you can appreciate every person. So pay attention to the people in your environment and your surroundings and figure out, is this a person that loves, you know, to be encouraged with words? Give them that. Don't deprive them from it, whether you are a supervisor or whether you are a peer. Whoever it is, give them that what they need. If they're a person and you know that they love gifts, you don't have to spend $500, but you can spend $5. If you know that they go down to, I'll just say Starbucks, like let's say they love to go to Starbucks, go grab a $5 gift card and just leave it on their desk with no motive behind it at all. No, and you're not expecting anything in return. So whatever it is, learn if you can, you know, it may be weird for you to say, hey, can you take this assessment? If you're a boss, you can do that, you know, from Gary Chapman's assessment. But it may be weird for you as a colleague, but think through what are the five languages of appreciation and show that to people. That's how you're able to bring your whole self to work, in that if you can't share scriptures and things like that, if it's not appropriate, the number one thing that you can show is love. So that's how you bring your whole self in.
Oh, that's such good stuff. That's inspiring. I really appreciate that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this has been so much fun.
I love talking to you.
I was thinking the same thing. Well, maybe we'll have to do a follow-up or something.
I'm all for it.
Okay. That's awesome. Well, thanks again. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Michelle. I just feel like her word pictures and the way she describes things and the wisdom of just the supermarket analogy and just all that stuff was so inspiring to me. I hope it was inspiring to you. I hope you have a chance to fulfill your dreams and pursue your dreams. And if you need someone like Michelle, you know, you can check her out on social media, check out her website. I put all the links in the show notes. Go and follow her. She's a great Instagram follow. And until next time, get out there and hustle.